Hi, this is Katrina and Seth, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Sass Jordan with Katrina Chester, and this is Zooming in the Lens. And today, Katrina, I think I want to just jump right in and talk about a subject that is pretty dear to my heart and something that's sort of been coming up a lot recently. And that subject is surrender. And I know that you've been going through some stuff, and you actually have a story that you were going to share with me before the podcast, but I thought, you know, we both thought, what the heck, why don't we just do it on air, considering that's what we're supposed to be doing here.
Yeah.
So what were you going to tell me about this?
Well, you brought up this topic, funny enough, and I was thinking about a recent time. Actually, it happened yesterday. I've been going through a series of tests, because I have some mysterious sort of things going on over the last few years from a fall I had. And I was going in to get results from a CAT scan. And not to alarm anybody, because it doesn't need to be alarming, but I was visiting an oncologist. And I know that may shock some friends and family that might be listening to this, but, you know, I never really told too many people because I just didn't want to worry them. And at the same time, it was me sort of surrendering to not give into the thought that are happening, you know, in your mind just naturally mm-hmm. from things like that happening. So I get in there to the office. It was supposed to be like a 10, 15 minute visit. And mind you, they took all these CAT scans and then booked an appointment 3 weeks from that date. And after I took this full body CAT scan with the dye and all this stuff.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I walked out of there and I said to myself, what was I thinking when I let that doctor tell me I have to wait 3 weeks? Like, what kind of cruelty is that, right? I mean, you know, everybody's mind is going to go somewhere, right? I mean, really good practice. I think that's, I'm being vulnerable right now, really, and telling everybody this, but also in even having myself say this out loud, because I want to share how troubled times can sometimes be the ultimate invitation for a surrender and a shift of perception. So,
yeah,
I called the office and I said, like, maybe a week into it, I left a message on the machine just saying, you know, can you just, I know that there's HIPAA regulations, but can you just call and tell me, you know, the results, or call me in earlier if it's not good or whatever. And nobody ever called me back. So in that moment, I realized, yeah, I can make a big, and believe me, my friends and family at the time would have said to me, you better call them up and give them a piece of your mind. And that is my, you know, my nature in my Katrina too, you know, in my personality is to just, you have to do it yourself and fight for it. But I didn't. I think also I can't take any sort of like, yeah, gold star credit for that. I think part of it definitely was a subconscious not wanting to know. And I am aware of that. I'm sure many people out there that have been in my shoes and worse come up against that. And it's not even like, you know, it's just a possibility. So I didn't have a conscious, I don't want to know, but I'm sure it was underlining in there. They never called me back. The appointment was yesterday. I walk in the office and I'm sharing the waiting room with a lot of people that have cancer. And I had just been teaching in Zooming in the Lens. And I don't know when anybody's going to hear this. So this could be old news by the time you hear it, or it could be a week old. So I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Just keep that in mind. And I was sharing with them how everything is usually running, well, at least in the spiritual dialogues that I'm having, things are running simultaneously, which is why it helped me to create Katrina One, which is my true self. You can name that anything. It could be God. It could be Atman in Hinduism. Just that
spirit.
Yeah, that quiet, yeah, unchanging part of you that it's been with you forever. And on the other hand is Katrina Two, and that's my personality and the thoughts and the things I think. And so I'm fully aware, not that that helps me in any way, but I'm fully aware of the dialogue. So I have a little bit of leeway from a bit of practice in being able to be entertained by my thoughts. So I almost feel a little bit like my thoughts are a product of my social conditioning, and they're the thoughts of the parents that I had in this incarnation and the life that I've lived. So I almost feel like they're the things that I'm extricating myself from, but not in a dysfunctional way, like I'm dismantling myself, but more in a way of though that's the mind thinking. It's not who I am.
Yeah.
So as I'm sitting there and I'm looking around at these people, I get welled up with compassion. There's a lot of people in there with scarves on their head because of the chemo, and some people that don't look sick at all. Anybody at an oncologist's office is dealing with something cancer-related. Different stages, I'm sure. When you're sitting in there and you don't conceptually have cancer, it's very similar to walking around as we do in everyday life, feeling separate from everybody. If you see somebody that you learned could look dangerous, you have a cerebral sort of nervous system reaction that was trained on your bias. In your heart, you may not feel that way. If it's your true heart, you definitely don't feel that way. So they're like, they're reactions, right? So I'm experiencing that. I'm feeling compassion, but I'm also in my mind daydreaming a bit about what life must be like for them. And I find myself mind to mind, known to known, right? The knower, that part of me saying, who are you, Katrina, to say, oh, you know, and it wasn't a pity thing, although I think sometimes compassion without awareness could maybe be that, you know.
Then it's not compassion.
Right.
Then, but
right.
I mean, you could venture into the pity territory without realizing it necessarily.
Yes, thank you for being more eloquent with it.
Okay. No.
I'm not the greatest at talking about this because this is my first time really talking about it, so don't mind me.
Not to mention, you're just processing the whole experience.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
sort of.
You know.
Yeah. So yeah, and I catch myself sometimes in that different shade of compassion, and then I do the things, the tools, the things that bring me home, bring me back, wake me up. So I'm filling in the dialogue of like, what's it like at their house, and you know, how often do they have to get chemo, and what kind of cancer do they have, and are they hopeful? Are they sad? And that other part of my brain was like, who do you think you are, Katrina? Like, you don't know anything about these people. And just because they have this doesn't mean that it hasn't made them, their whole world open up like suffering has done for me. So I was educating myself mind to mind, you know, but all the while simultaneously, the one is underneath there just watching. And just being and holding space for me and my personality, which is the biggest pain in the ass. You know, it's holding space for that large ego and mind and the net and all of it. and loving that too, because it does me no good to sit there and go, you know, to critique myself. I catch myself quick, but doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And I think that's what was important for me in the Zooming in the Lens course that I was doing, was to say that you're not giving up one thing in spite of the other. So in finding surrender, you're not losing your dignity. You know what I mean? And to give up compassion, to give compassion, you're not giving up and feeling bad for somebody that you don't think is a good person. Like, there's all sorts of the dualities between the two. You know what I'm saying? To hate somebody doesn't mean that you can't love them and keep them in your heart. But we are brought up like this, which brings me to the moment that I'm in that waiting room. I'm there an hour and I get up and I'm like, I really have to go. I have a client and I know an hour. And I finally get up. I know. And I don't even really mind the time so much, but I was just, that's my dharma. I'm going to be late for something. That's the commitment I made. And I've got to keep it because it's somebody else's time and my time and it's important. So I go to the front desk and I say, you know, can you tell me how much longer it's going to be? Maybe I need to reschedule. I wasn't pissed or anything. And she says, it's Katrina, right? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, let me grab your file. I'm like, okay. She grabs my file. And I said, yeah, you know, she goes, oh, I did call you back. And I'm like, I didn't get a message. She said, I left you a message. I'm like, what did it say? And she's like, well, let me look in your file. I'm like, oh, I just want to know, what did it say? So she looks in my file and she says, I think you need to stay.
Oh, Jesus.
Right?
Christ.
And I said, I do. And I think I actually probably didn't even say I do. I went very silent. I had this gaze, which felt like a minute. It was probably a couple seconds. And I said, okay. And I went and I sat back down and I giggled. I know. I do not think, still even a day after, that it was a giggle of nerves or anything like that. It was this description I've always heard from Ram Dass, which is not the first time I've felt it, and from many other, you know, wise people out there. It's like that cosmic giggle. Because as I look up at everybody in that waiting room then, they no longer were separate from me.
Yes.
Now, was that true? I don't know if it's true or not.
No.
Because all I've been given is this, you should stay. Right? So,
my Lord.
So interesting to look around and notice, because I am cultivating that part that is not just going, oh, it's about me all the time. I have periodic breaks. And in that periodic break, I looked around and I thought, you're me, I'm you. There's my face on your body. There's my face on your body. There's my face with no hair. And I felt this sort of oneness with them that my mind was dialoguing. And then my one was simply stating, it is as it always has been.
Right.
Like, it is as it always has been. And look how quick the shift of perception, when I don't know anything, the shift of perception. And what that also served as was a way of getting out of my thinking mind about what it could be. Because let me tell you, those 15 minutes until I went in to see the doctor could have been way worse. I get in there and then, you know, sometimes you have to wait for the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse comes in and says, well, we were told you wanted a copy of the report. I'm like, yeah. But now I'm like, I don't know if I want a copy of the report because I'm just going to read it by myself. But it was perfect. I am actually really happy that I went by myself, not because of any other reason than I think practice ultimately is always by yourself. It just sometimes feels better. And if you practice with people and also by yourself. It's not, it shouldn't always be that. It mm-hmm. should be a bit of both, at least for me. That's all I can say. So they give me the report, and on it I see that there's an appearance of something abnormal in my lungs. And it's a bunch of language that, yeah, there's a part of me that knows what a micronodule throughout the lung area could be. And I also know it could be nothing. So there again, I am sitting there in purgatory. And what do? I decide to do japa, which is my mala beads. And so I do them on realizing the human predicament that I am in right now, which is so clear to me, is no different. No different, Sass, than yeah. every day for everybody else. Why? Because all of being alive, all of being human, is about being in the place of not knowing. Always around the corner, there is this moment of you could get hit by a car, you could win the lottery.
You could be diagnosed with cancer.
Anytime. You can go to dye your hair and they screw up the color and it comes out green and you're not a punker. So it's not cool.
You're not a punker.
No, you have like a job at like an advertising agency where you need to like look presentable, I suppose. I mean, all the time there is this moment. But in that moment, my ego mind was saying, this is special.
Right. Oh, God.
But it wasn't special. And because I was using this space, which the space in the waiting room, the space in the actual doctor's, room. Yep. Yeah, thank you. Instead of it being, oh my God, I can't believe it. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is some kind of cruel joke, which my mind could be saying, but simultaneously, I'm reporting to you what was going on simultaneously in many different realms. So here I was given this space to read this thing and see the opportunity that I'm given and how it's no different than every single person out there. It's just that we're not tuned on an everyday basis to that channel. We're tuned to the channel of pretending, wanting to believe, and this fictitious feeling of control. We're wanting to think that we have control. Well, we don't, and we never have. And all I'm doing in this moment is awakening to it, no different than anybody else. And we all have that choice to awaken to the moment. So I was just awakening in this moment. This woman comes in. She's a really cool kind of young, hip oncologist lady. And she, you know, says, okay, so, you know, here's where we're at. You know, this is here. And I hear that you have this cough. And when did the cough start? I'm like, ironically, the cough started like a day or two after I took the CAT scan. Okay, she's like, all right, well, sometimes like pneumonia type stuff can show up as this. And it's all throughout. And it's like little dots where other things that might present itself would maybe be bigger and sectioned.
More clustered.
Apart. Yeah, more clustered. Exactly. She's right. Like, but I can't say it is and I can't say it isn't. So we're going to put you on a Z-Pack. And see if you're, you know, the antibiotics take a hold. And even if they don't work the first time, you may need a second dose. So I think we're going to watch this. And in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, you know, obviously keeping in touch with her for any new developments, we're going to come back in and do a whole, you know, CAT scan again with the dye and this and this. So I looked at her and I just sort of had this cosmic giggle. And, you know, of course, she's positive in the whole thing. Her vibe is positive because her reality, the channel she's on, is that right outside the door for me are all these people that are getting chemotherapy, sitting in the chairs. And to her, her reality is, I am nothing on the scale of what she's having to deal with. And whether I am or I'm not, it all depends on my state of mind to it. And to her, I think she was also, because she's a positive person, was just saying, let's just wait and see, which is kind of like being on the road, right? Hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
So there was that 3 weeks, and now it turned into this. So I walked out of there just giggling, just laughing, saying to myself, All right. So today, this minute is no different than yesterday or 2 months from now in that we know nothing. And I have this clarity of what medicine is, but from a compassionate place, definitely not from a like they suck or they don't know what they're talking about place at all. I have this very aware kind of feeling that what doctors are doing is they are agreeing and signing up to administer when you are diagnosed with this or you're diagnosed with this or say prior to diagnosing, you are appearing with this condition, this symptom. I'm going to go through my Rolodex in my mind of knowledge. And the statistics show that it is this or it is this. And then when it's this or when it's this, pull out my Rolodex again from whatever, you know, medical school I went to. It's pointing to this. So then I do this. Whereas I think majority of my life, the concept of being a physician to me was that you're somebody that's curing me. You're like a scientist that's finding a cure. And I don't mean that I ever had an awareness of that. I just mean that the trust or the belief, let's say, that I had in doctors of being this, you know, it's they know things. Let's just go into it. Of course, they know things. And I have an immense amount of respect for their dedication to learning this book. That's what I have respect for. You learned this medical book. You use your instincts, your guts, and that is worth paying for. And it's amazing that you're sharing that with me. But are they sitting in a lab after I leave, like Dr. House? And sitting in there going, well, Katrina's showing up at hypercalcemic and she's got this and that. Like, let's really put our thoughts together and figure out all the different things that it could be. They're moving through life with a roll card, a roll and a model sheet. And
sounds more like a detective.
Yeah, it sounds more like a detective. Exactly. But a detective with a referral service. So if that detective is like, well, you know what, you know, in the medical world, you're showing up with migraines. Well, then you need to go see a neurologist because migraines are, that's his bag. And like they get to pick specialties. So like the oncologist would say, well, if this isn't cancer, then it's not my job, you know? So they sort of get to be detectives of that. And so then you get wrapped up in the system. And to even get to that oncologist, I just had a really good GP that saw a couple of warning signs. So you have to float around the system going to different books and different books in the library. There's the oncology place. There's the neurologist. There's the orthopedic surgeon. There's, oh, this guy likes to do surgery. If you don't want to have surgery, don't go to him. As if all he's going to ever do is surgery, then he should just be called a surgeon and not even orthopedic. Just be, you want surgery, come to me. So it all gets very confusing. But throughout the medical system, I had this awareness and drove home going, oh my God, I have such a better, more healthy appreciation for doctors, where I have these ridiculous expectations maybe in my youth. I now feel like I have a realistic expectation that we're all kind of teammates in this together. They do the best they can. We do the best we can. She doesn't know anything. If she did, why would she not want to tell me? There's really no conspiracy there. And out of it all, Sass, was this amazing example of me surrendering to what is. Because there is nothing I can do, whether it is or it isn't. Now, I practice on the thoughts that it is, and I practice on the thoughts that it isn't. And then underneath that, I just am. Mm-hmm. So who knows? You know, stay tuned. You know, who knows? But
that's an enormously powerful and profound experience, if you ask me. And I mean, I can't think of anything really off the top of my head that would illustrate surrender quite as succinctly.
Well, you know, it actually feels more like a surrender, ironically, to say this. To actually
speak about
it
publicly.
It does.
I understand
it
that.
Does.
Well, that's because it's such a it's such a personal, seemingly personal experience that it's, you know, you, it makes you very vulnerable and you're opening yourself up to other people's opinions and ideas, which can be very confusing after a while. You know, you should do this, you should do this, you should do that. It's not, and everybody's well-meaning. I'm not talking about intent. I'm just talking about the onslaught of ideas and opinions that can happen when you speak about these things publicly. Now, the other...
Well, yeah, but let me just also say something. I think some of it is that, but I think a large majority of it is there's a lot of suffering out there. And there's a lot of people
that they
didn't even get that. We don't know. They're just dealing in the cancer. And so there's that part of me that feels like, what right do I even have to talk about it in any way, shape, or form? It's a very serious thing. And I don't want to make light of it in any way and say, you know, oh, well, I can feel this way because the diagnosis isn't in yet. But you know what? According to my mind, if like my personality, I'm going through the procedure as anybody else would with a human mind. There's parts of me that does already have it. So what, that's the part that I'm practicing with. And so what I'm saying to those out there is that those people in the waiting room, by the way, as I walked out in this mm-hmm. state of purgatory, not only was I them, but they were me. And we were both each other as I was walking out. And I looked at everyone in the eye and I had this such feeling of meeting, whether it was in health, whether it was in this, because like, there was moments in that waiting room in the beginning stages where I actually looked around and I caught myself like covering up my hair. And I felt this like, I don't want them to feel bad because this person here doesn't have hair and I don't want their dialogue in their mind. And I'm sitting here going, Katrina, you don't have that kind of effect on people. Get over yourself. Like, this person is going through this. It's not like I'm the first person they see with hair. Like just get over it. And in that moment, what it does to me though, Sass, is it makes it not so personal, which I think happens in the self-dialogue market. Mm-hmm. It allowed me to separate from the thought and laugh at myself and have a sense of humor in my predicament that even in the waiting room, it was about me. So to those out there, you know, I want to say that
it's always about us.
It is. And I don't care, you know, who is not going to admit that. I mean, just don't admit that.
It is.
And you know who really says it beautifully, whether you like him or not? But this guy, Duncan Trussell, he's a comedian, but he is also in the spiritual world with the Ram Dass friends that I have. And he does get on and talk about spirituality with them. And I think that he uses his comedy outlet to sort of interject it in with people. But he has this great ability to laugh at himself. And he did have cancer. And he had lost his mother, I think, a year or two ago. And hearing him speak about it, he shares that with me, that we don't feel right to speak about it at times because there are people out there that I don't want to feel like, well, shut up, you know, you don't have anything and look at the trouble I'm in. And yes, and there's part of me that is floating in that river. But that's where the surrender of saying this out loud comes from, because there's people out there with less things going on and people out things with more things going on. And at one time or another, we all feel that we shouldn't speak up because it's not enough or it is too much. And I'm here to say that just doing this right now is a real leap of faith in my practice that I'm sharing this. So I hope you go easy on me and understand that I'm not in any way, you know, claiming to have any suffering that's greater, you know, than anybody else. It's just a moment in time that I felt this.
I don't think anyone would think that anyway. So you're perfectly fine with that. The thing that was really interesting to me, though, you were talking about a little bit earlier, was you were talking about medicine and you were talking about the fact that there are specialties in medicine.
Right.
This, I think, you know, really, I think that's my beef with the whole thing. is the fact that everything is so specialized and the body or the individual is not seen as a collective or as a whole. It's seen as pieces.
Well,
and I don't see how anything, even a car, doesn't work as pieces. I mean, any mechanic will tell you it's the whole. But on the other hand,
yeah,
a car can have a piece that breaks down and you replace that piece.
Mm-hmm.
In a human, we're getting more that way with robotics and God knows what else, you know. I'm not sure, personally, that from a spiritual, this is my, of course, personal view, spiritual viewpoint, that necessarily works for me personally, because I think everything has a frequency and an energy, and that if you take something that is incompatible energetically with and put it with something it's incompatible with, sorry, I'm not speaking straight today. Very, very stormy here.
And yeah,
my mind isn't working
heard.
Straight. Anyways, if you put two incompatible energies together, one will, you know, cancel the other one out, or it would cause more damage.
Well, what's the reference, though? What are you referring that to?
I'm talking about seeing the body or an individual as pieces as opposed to a whole.
And you're feeling like medicine is doing that?
I find medicine is very much that way. There's oncology,
there's
gynecology, there's, you know, orthopedic surgery, neurosurgery, whatever. There's a billion different, you know, gastrointestinal, this, that, and the other. But when you go to see that specialist, and God bless him, I'm just saying this is my problem with it. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It's just what I'm challenged by with it. They don't seem to take into account the rest of the body. It's only that part that they're looking at. And that part could be malfunctioning, I am saying, because of a malfunction elsewhere. It's like the left bone, the right bone's connected to the head bone and all that crap. That, you know, like in osteopathy. I go and see an osteopath, a wonderful, wonderful man, and he works. It's so fascinating to see. I had gallbladder problems, and I was having a lot of difficulty with my left shoulder, that blah, 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 blah. All this to say that before he even knew anything about my medical history, he was looking at the way my body is structured and held, the way I hold it. And he goes, oh, look, there's a torsion here in the spine and this and that. I does that. And he goes, see how this line, this imaginary line of energy that's running through your body, how it's twisted slightly here. He said, traditionally, I would look at something like that and I would say you probably had liver, gallbladder, digestive problems for a very long time because of this torsion of energy right here, or the way the ligaments are holding themselves and move. But it was my left shoulder that was hurting. How did he know that my gallbladder and my liver were screwed up? Because it's part of a whole. Do you see what I mean? So if I went to what they call allopathic doctor, they would have done blood tests and this and that and the other thing. They would never have ever discovered that it's a ligament that's shutting off the energy here or pulling the organ this way, which is causing it to behave in this. You see what I mean? So that's why I find allopathic medicine to be challenging. I think it's brilliant for so many things. What I think it has been lacking, and I think this is changing now because I've seen a lot of doctors in this day and age who are starting to have what I consider a more open mind on the subject. What I think allopathic medicine is lacking is a comprehensive view of the body and the individual as a spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical being. All of these things being something that affects the overall health of that being with its own programming and its own this and its own that from its own background, as well as parts that might be not functioning properly. When one part isn't functioning properly, why is it not connected to another part? It's like it doesn't make any sense to me. That's my challenge with it, and that's why I think that the merging or the amalgamation of what we call alternative modalities with allopathic medicine is the the way of the future. How can that not be?
Well, what?
Did you ever see Star Trek?
Yes.
So, you know, on Star Trek, they have the tricorder thing. And they go through the body.
Yeah,
And you go, oh, there's a malfunction in the heart, in the left ventricle, and like that kind of thing. What that tricorder is doing, I could be wrong, but it's reading frequencies, energetic signals that are coming out. And every part of the body has a frequency level that it, when it's healthy, it's between this and that. And if it's higher than that or lower than that, it's because it's malfunctioning. There's an imbalance there. So you want to get the frequency back to what it's supposed to be in there. To me, that's medicine of the future. Energy medicine is all based on energy in the end. Anyways, that was me going off down a path that has absolutely nothing to do necessarily with surrender.
Well,
or it was what you were talking about that made me think of that.
No, I think it's an interesting other view. I think what we tend to do as a culture is we like want to, I hate to keep saying this phrase, but throw the baby out with the bathwater. So what I'm suggesting is, why can't we do it all?
That's what I think.
Like, why? I think Western medicine, I think is great. They're great administrators, you know? So you have this, let's get to the problem. Let's do this. They might not care about what it's leading from,
but I also
think that there's repercussions from being a society that is shut off from anything other than medicine from the medical world. We're shut off from that, and alternative therapies have never been scientifically proven, they say, right?
Some of them have.
Some of them have.
There's a lot of pharmaceutical stuff that's never been scientifically proven either, or not agreed upon. You know what I mean?
So I say, why don't we do both and not shun one to get the other? Not try to be happy.
That's what I say.
So you don't want to be sad. Not try to be, I want to know if I have this, or I want to forget about it completely. We're always in the middle. Yeah. Purgatory to me stands for life. We're always in this place of not knowing. And we either walk around thinking we know, which means there's no room to learn anything else, or we are so down on ourselves that we know nothing, that we don't even have faith in ourselves enough to take a step forward to learn anything. Then we feel stuck inside of our body. So there's many different ways in which to use both things. I feel like Western medicine should stop blaming the woo-woo, you know, tagline of alternative therapies, and alternative therapies should not down Western medicine. I think we all do what we can. It really depends on what the intention of the patient is. And if we, each of us as patients, are clear about what our intention is, I feel like each person is responsible for their own intention, whether coming from fear or control or just love or surrender, that maybe the doctors of today won't be so caught up in the system, because I have compassion for them at this point. They're not making the money that everybody used to think that they were making, a lot of them, with the Obamacare coming into the states. It's like, you know, very well-known cardiologists are doing clinic time where they're making not a lot of money. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be doing that, but it's almost like they're forced to be doing that because insurance companies are not allowing them to be doctors. Not the doctors for most of, I can't say all, but the reasons why a lot of doctors that I speak to wanted to be doctors isn't what's happening now. They are becoming administrators. Like, here's what the book says, and we'll give you this. And here's what this says, and I'll give you this. And
that doesn't work for me at all. That's not really medicine. No, it's not
an
medicine.
Administrator.
That's, yes.
But they don't seem happy about it either. That's
pill
my
pusher.
Point. So there's a surrender happening from all of us. And if they're caught in a system, the system is caught by the consumers. The consumers are caught by the ones in power, like, and I'm not saying it's any one thing's fault, but the change has to start with us
individual.
So what's your intention for surrender, right? So look at the definition of what surrender actually means. It's to give control or use to someone else. This is the Western version.
Oh, yeah.
To agree to stop fighting, hiding, resisting, because you know that you will not win or succeed, as if that's what we're supposed to be doing. If your intention is to win or succeed, I think there's bigger problems going on, right?
Uh-huh.
So, but we're surrendering every day, Sass. Every day we're surrendering. We're surrendering every time we drive a car, every time we're breathing, because you're not the breather. The breathing is you. It's happening. It's already happening autonomically. You're not the blinker. Blinking's happening. If you stop to think, oh my God, I've got to control this blinking. I've got to, you're surrendering every day to the things that the wonders of your human body. And you know what you pass it off as? We all pass it off as, oh, well, so what? Everybody blinks. Big deal. Like, it's not a big deal. I want magic. I want fireworks to shoot out of my ass. Then I'll look at the human body and go, holy shit, amazing. But for those people out there who've done autopsies and dissections, it's pretty different when you're standing there holding a human heart or reaching into the skull and pulling out the brain.
Yep.
And seeing all of the areas that these personality attributes are coming
from. The key to all of it, to me, is to take personal responsibility for it, and you decide how your care is going to happen, and you just, you know, how it's going to work for you. What's going to, I mean, I sound like a cliche. I understand that, but it's handing over your care to another in trust is,
Well, again, why does it have to be one or the other? Why don't you take your personal responsibility, you care
and
for yourself.
And then you trust what you've picked.
And you get team members. And that team member may be an oncologist, it may be a radiologist, it may be a hematologist, whatever. But you're a partner with all these people. You're not walking in saying, doctor, tell me what to do.
Here, you take the reins.
Now, I know we all haven't studied medicine, but there is the internet. So you, and then, listen, I say that very lightly because,
oh my God,
that Sass just
talk
gave
about
me the dirtiest
morass
look. I know. No, you're so
no,
right.
I didn't give you a dirty look. I'm just like, oh my God, you had to get really lost and freaked out.
Oh my God. Do you know I have not Googled anything other than what
good
the website
don't
my doctor told me to go to? That's it. Because I don't want that dialogue. But there's libraries. Okay. There's books. There's talking to friends.
Same
there's
thing
podcasts. There's, you know what it is? It's retuning ourselves to the big capital L, listening. What are you listening for? You're listening for things that ring true to your heart and not just your mind. You're listening not to go, that's what I should do, or that's what I should do, or you're right, no, you're wrong. Stay in the place of truth, which is nobody knows. Yes, there are illnesses that run on the statistical line, the percentage rate. And so you do that, but don't make that mean that you don't do anything else too. So to me, surrender is allowing to let the moment tell you what it is. It doesn't need to be, I surrender to this person or this religion or this group. I mean, look at the last thing I'll say about it is AA, the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Surrendering is to the highest good and allowing the discomfort of the unknown. Surrender to yourself. Surrender to the water, which makes you float rather than fighting against the tide that helps you. You all know that have done, you know, rescue in the water. If you fight the tide, you go under quicker. Don't fight
that
the ego.
Me.
Right? That would be, yeah. Who am I kidding? That would be me too, yelling, Sass, let me a life raft.
I feel like, God, we need a body, I mean, not a body, we need a beach guard or whatever you call them. What are they called? You know?
The floaty
people
things.
That save you in the water.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, lifeguards.
They're not called bodyguards.
No, lifeguards.
Oh, thank you.
Surrender is scary to people because we feel like we are, normally we're operating on one channel, which is our personality plane. But if we imagine that there's many channels to turn to and ask yourself, who in you is surrendering? If it's the ego mind surrendering, I'll tell you right now, my mind has never agreed to that, ever. It's not a mind thing. Think about it as a cultivation of that other part of you that is not changing. That part of you that at 50 can close your eyes and remember being 2, 5, 8, and it's familiar. That sense, that feeling of seeing your parents and, you know, outside of the roles, outside of the models and the reactions of what we all carry around in life, you don't wake up every day and have a different connection to yourself unless you're some high walking sadhu, you know? So, I mean, we all want that, I'm sure. But what I'm saying is that if you look at surrender from just a mind, a knowing channel, it is going to seem dogmatic and religious and wimpy and weak.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no.
Not to you. You're in a different place to surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not me and the Western friends and
clients. It takes the most enormous courage.
That's
surrender.
Right.
It takes enormous courage. It's a brave act. It's an act of bravery and courage, not...
Absolutely.
Nothing else.
Absolutely.
And it's terrifying because it's surrendering to the fact that fear is, and it just is, and underneath fear is the fear is death. Underneath fear is death, the end. What does death mean? That's a long one. We're not going there.
Yeah,
right now.
And surrender doesn't have to mean that. Surrender can just be like surrendering to your breath. Listen, if you are somebody that has dabbled or is dabbling in psychedelics, every time you take a trip, you're surrendering. Every single time. Do not think for a second that you know the trip you're going to get, that you know when you take a hit off that joint, that it's going to be exactly the same high as it was before. So people that have dabbled in that can very easily understand, oh, you mean that surrender. Yes, I mean that surrender.
And meditation. Meditation.
Oh, my God, without saying, of course.
Surrender.
Of course. Yeah, surrendering to unconditional love. Surrendering, you know what, just leave it here. Surrender to the moment. Forget about surrendering to the past or the future. Just surrender right here, right now, in the moment. What's it giving you? What are you giving it? Mm-hmm. And I want to just close this with something I heard from Reggie Ray, who's a great Vajrayana Buddhist teacher in Colorado. He has a place called Dharma Ocean Foundation. You have a choice in life. You can either strive to be perfect or you can strive to be whole. If you strive to be whole, you have to surrender to your process. You have to surrender to the seasons of your psyche. You have to realize that allowing yourself to be depressed, tired, and totally uninspired is the ultimate trust in the universe. And check out the difference between belief and faith. I will say Alan Watts does a good one there. Maybe I can get him for the audio at the end of this. But either that or maybe a tool like I was thinking of giving you from Reggie Ray. He has 5 steps in dealing with anger, which is a surrender, but it's a tool from another way. So if you have any questions or you want to talk more about it, there's so much more about surrender that I can.
Oh, God.
We could talk about this forever. But we really appreciate you tuning in and dealing with our 2s and our 1s and
and yours.
Yeah, which I would like to deal with your 2s and 1s. So write to us at ZITL course.
Can I get a 3?
@gmail.com. And I surrender to the possibilities. I'll keep you posted, Sass, of course. And I'm sure that I'm going to be fine, because regardless of whatever it is what it is.
And you will always be fine.
That's right. Because the practice is right now. It's in the process of not knowing, which is very familiar, because you know what? I know nothing.
And neither do I. I do know I love you, though.
I know I surrender to my love for you, Sassy.
See you next time, honey.
See you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
So everybody's in this situation. We're all completely insecure. We're all headed straight for death as if we had been condemned by a judge. And yet here we are, all clinging on to things. And we have all sorts of alibis for doing this. We say, well, I have responsibilities for my dependents and I've got to cling on. But all you're doing is you're teaching your dependents to cling the same way as you are. And making them miserable by learning to go on surviving compulsively. So the thing is, same way, if you're caught in a torrent and you try to get out of it by swimming against it, you'll just wear yourself out and you're still carried along with it. So the sensible thing to do is to turn around and swim with it. And if you want to get out of it, swim towards the edge. But go with it. Same way when you're sailing. Always keep the wind in your sails. If you want to go against the wind, tack. But use the wind. So it's this way, you know. We're all in this great stream of change, which we call life. We are the stream. If you imagine you're separate from it and you're being carried along by it as if you were a cork, that's a delusion. You're a wave of the stream itself. So get with it.
Music and editing, special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.